Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Sarah D'Elia, in for Mike Collins. On the Monday before Thanksgiving, we're offering a cornucopia of insights and advice on how to combat political stress, whether that's stress from the election or how to deal with family on opposing political sides at the holiday dinner table. We've got you covered this hour. Later in the program, we'll be discussing bridging the political divide with two members of the group Braver Angels Alliance of Charlotte. The goal of the organization is to bring Americans together, no matter who they voted for, and we'll hear some tips on how to approach political disagreements and learn more about the work they do at the polls to show unity, not division. Then we'll hear from journalist and author Anna Goldfarb, who writes about mending broken relationships with loved ones, and she also has tips on navigating politics around the holidays with family, friends, and even neighbors. But first, we're going to discuss the effects of political polarization and how to cope with political anxiety. And to do that, I'm going to welcome my first guest of the morning, Laura Gilliam, a licensed clinical psychologist in Chapel Hill. Laura, welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So according to the American Psychological Association, research has accelerated since the 2016 election because experts want to have a better understanding about the unique aspects of political anxiety, including where it might overlap with general anxiety and where it differs. So from your point of view as a psychologist, how do you describe political anxiety?
Well, as the term implies, it's basically anxiety, stress, worry, and fear about political events or political news or political conversations. And it basically, I think, taps into our need for predictability and security in our world. It can also be felt not only as anxiety, but as anger, as helplessness, sadness. So lots of emotions can go along with that. And a lot of people feel it these days.
Yeah. Is there a distinction between general anxiety of just being a person in this world and political anxiety, or do they present the same?
Well, there certainly are similarities in the way that we feel anxiety, no matter what it's about. We can feel physical tension. We can feel, increased heart rate, sweaty palms, that kind of thing, depending on the context. But, and basically it, with political anxiety, it probably more often takes the form of preoccupation and ruminating and worry about possible negative future events due to politics. And of course, sustained stress of any kind really is not good for our health.
Yeah, what are some of the consequences of that sustained stress? I imagine there are some that are both mental and physical.
Yeah. Sustained stress really can take a toll on our heart health, our well-being, it's similar to the effect of smoking if you're constantly under stress.
So let's give some folks some good news for those listening along. I mean, what are some, I don't want to say easy, but some attainable solutions, some coping mechanisms that people can reach for quickly, especially as the stress of the holiday season is on top of us right now?
Yeah, absolutely. We know a lot now about what helps with anxiety. Basically some basic things are to, stay physically active, to spend time in nature, to practice mindfulness, to listen to music, do things beyond, read the news, for sure. We all spend way more time focusing on political news and political content, and consuming more political content than we did 50 years ago, 20, even 10 years ago. And so we need to make sure we balance that with spending time with our loved ones and doing things we enjoy. For, you know, it's very easy to get anxious and worried about what the future holds in our country based on, you know, if your side just lost the election, for example. But there are many, many things you can do at a local level that are good for society and your community and good for you. You can get engaged in causes and projects that you care about, even better if it's in person. Working with other people to solve a problem together has lots and lots of benefits to your mood, your sense of purpose, and your health.
Yeah. What do you say to some people? Because I've talked to a few folks who are, they're disappointed by the results of the election in this case, and they're feeling maybe just fatigued and tired, and like they want to do something, but they don't really know what to do, but they're sort of in this, I guess, rest liminal space right now, not quite ready to take action, but knowing that there's something that they want to do. What would you say to those folks in particular?
Yeah, I think if you need to take some time and feel your feelings and process it. And one thing that I really recommend to people is to, you know, as you read and as you think about and as you talk about the situation, seek out multiple perspectives. The current news environment is incentivized, and particularly social media, to feed us the things that confirm our previous beliefs. And there's always more than one side to a story. There are multiple perspectives and dimensions. And if you're just reading, you know, one news source, one side of things, you're not fully informed. And having a bigger perspective or a more nuanced perspective on the situation can really help.
Yeah. What about the amount of news that we consume? I mean, we live in a 24-hour news cycle. We, as social media, is constantly changing, constantly updating, constantly on your phone, in your hand, if you want it to be. How do you suggest people with a healthy point of view take in and consume that social media and that 24-hour news cycle?
Yeah, I'd say be intentional about it as much as you can. You know, curate your news feed so that you're not just getting one type of news or one source of news. There is a really, really good news source that I follow that curates some of the best arguments on both sides of the aisle, or sometimes several sides of, you know, different political topics, and then gives you his own take. The journalist is Isaac Saul, and he has a newsletter called Tangle that is just excellent for giving you a, you know, multifaceted perspective. But also, yeah, limit your time. You know, you may want to take certain apps off your phone if they are, if you know, if you find yourself scrolling endlessly. Doom scrolling is not good for anyone.
Yes, I think we can all agree on that. So I read that you specialize in couples therapy, and I was wondering what you were hearing or seeing with political stress and couples. Is it having an impact on couples as a unit that you've seen?
It can, yes. And I do a lot of couples therapy, and political stress or political arguments are not real high on the list of things that people come in for. It definitely comes up. And it can be if partners are politically divided, which is less and less common nowadays. But, you know, they can certainly struggle to have conversations about politics. But even if two people are on the same side politically, if one person is highly, highly politically, you know, tuned in or highly anxious or outraged, and the other is a little more laid back or detached, that can be a stressor between the partners, because You know, one person feels like the other person is not sufficiently aware, or maybe doesn't care, or maybe, you know, so that can create difficulties as well. You know, why don't you see what I see or feel what I feel? Are we not compatible? Especially because we tend to identify much more strongly with, you know, a political side or a political viewpoint than we used to, so that it affects all our relationships. Often, not for everyone, but often it does affect our relationships for sure.
Yeah. Are there things that as parents we should keep in mind when we're talking about politics at the dinner table or like in earshot of our kids? 'Cause, you know, I can just think of if your candidate lost and you've kind of instilled maybe accidentally in your child that, you know, the bad person won, or, you know, what does that do to a kid and their anxiety? I imagine that this could potentially have a ripple effect within a family unit.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's not great to tell our kids that, you know, everything's about to fall apart because of, you know, who's in power or something like that, or that anyone who voted for the other person is bad. And, you know, those are absolutes, and those are certainties that nobody really has. Nobody knows what's going to happen, and nobody knows, you know, the full truth about something like that. So I would say really avoid making dehumanizing statements about, certainly about voters, you know, other citizens. You know, I encourage debate in your house, you know, respectful debate and listening to different perspectives. I think that's something we all need to get better at in this time.
Mm-hmm. I've seen anecdotally, and we're going to talk a little bit more about neighbors later in the program, but I did want to get your take on this. You know, anecdotally, I've seen folks with like a Harris wall sign pointed not straight towards the road, but to their neighbor's house. And then that house has a Trump sign and it's pointed to that house. So they're clearly talking to each other, even if they may not actually be talking to each other. And we only have about a minute left, but I wanted to get your take on how to be a good neighbor from a psychologist standpoint and things that we should be keeping in mind, especially during this divisive time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, don't assume that you know what your neighbor thinks based on a sign in their yard. Don't assume you know what they want for the future. I would say approach them with curiosity and ask them. You know, we get afraid to talk about it, or if we do talk, we talk at each other. You know, we don't know. Your neighbors are human beings, and I'm sure you probably know that. You probably know that if, you know, if the power goes out in your neighborhood, they're gonna help you, and you're gonna help them. You know, at the end of the day, we are human beings, and we need to live with each other and not demean each other or hate each other because of politics.
Well, I want to say thank you to my first of many guests this hour, psychologist Laura Gilliam. When we come back, we're going to turn to a group committed to bridging the gap between Democrats and Republicans. Their mission is to find the common ground we all share. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and you're listening to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Sarah D'Elia, in for Mike Collins. Political stress is the topic of the hour. We've covered so far how to identify it and learn some tools to address it. And later in the program, we're going to hear how to mend or at least navigate relationships with loved ones or who are on opposing political sides that have become stressed since the election. But now we're going to turn to the group Braver Angels Alliance of Charlotte. It's an organization committed to bridging the political divide between Democrats and Republicans. My next two guests are Richard London, the blue co-chair of the group, along with Maury Wilkinson, the red co-chair of the organization. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to be here.
So, Maury, I'm going to start with you. For folks who may just be hearing about Braver Angels for the first time, how do you all describe the work that you do?
Well, I'll just say the mission, which describes it pretty well. We're bringing Americans together to bridge the partisan divide and strengthen our democratic republic. You know, basically getting people to learn how to listen to each other and understand each other.
Yeah. How do you do that in this day and age? Richard, I'd love to hear your take. How do you do that? Where do you start?
It starts with a desire to listen, a desire to say there's too much animosity in the country. If everybody thinks the other side's an enemy, nothing's ever going to get done. So Braver Angels is, we don't call them Republicans and Democrats, we call them Reds and Blues. Reds, Blues, and Other make up Braver Angels. It's a national grassroots organization. Maury and I are the co-chairs for the Charlotte Metropolitan Alliance. And it's, I will say this, it's hard. It's hard changing your mindset that society, that social media, that the news has beat into you, to understand that we can talk with each other and communicate with each other. But by and large, everybody we come in contact with agrees that it's necessary.
We mentioned this is a national organization with local chapters. Maury, what was the inspiration to start a chapter in the Charlotte area?
To bring it into our community so that we learn to talk. And, you know, I personally have been in bubbles, and, you know, and then I'll be in a bubble where everybody around, I'm a conservative. I'm conservative politically, but I'm in bubbles where I'm around a lot of people that are liberal, and I haven't felt comfortable talking to them. I mean, I want people to like me, you know, but I want to be able to be who I am and say what I am and respect what other people's viewpoints and understand them and understand why we have some differences. And so I think it's just really important.
Yeah. Richard, what was the inspiration for you deciding to be a part of this?
I was tired of having this mindset that the other side is the enemy, that they're completely wrong. I remember growing up, and to me, the reason why our government worked was because Democrats and Republicans in the Senate and in Congress would compromise. And the problem is now, it seems like nobody's compromising. Everybody is defending their own position or bolstering their own party. And Braver Angels feels this is a grassroots movement to come back up to eventually influence the powers that be when they see that people on the grassroots don't want divisiveness, don't want to be fighting.
How many members do you all have, and what are the events that you all typically do for the public?
Well, we're a new organization in Charlotte. The Charlotte Alliance was only formed in June. We're growing. We have Zoom meetings the second and fourth Thursdays of every month. The size of the meeting varies. It could be, you know, 8 or 10 people. We've had events. We had an event up in the university area where we had 35 participants, and that was great. It's slowly growing. The email list that we have that was provided to us by Braver Angels National for the Charlotte metropolitan area, which is what we define ourselves by, has about 350 names of people who have been a affiliated or joined or attended a Brave Angels event at some point in the past. So the mailing list that we have is about 350. That being said, the people that, like any other organization, that actually show up on a regular basis is considerably small.
Maury, my understanding is that if you want to have like a local chapter like you all do, you have to have a blue co-chair and a red co-chair. Do I have that right?
Yes, you do.
And
you
why
do.
Is that important?
To have balance. And I mean, to be able to have balance and be able to understand learn to understand the perspectives of people on the other side of the equation. And the interesting thing is, in the events and workshops that I participated in, the differences are nowhere near as big as what I've thought going into them. I mean, you know, which is really kind of amazing. And you know, they in Charlotte, Braver Angels last year hosted an election integrity workshop, and all the participants by the end felt so much better about things at the end because we came to some common ground about various issues. And, you know, just realize maybe the way we want to achieve goals might be different, but we had a lot of the same goals. So,
yeah,
it's been very interesting.
Richard, Maury answered my question, so I will throw the same question to you that I was going to ask, which is, what have you learned by being a part of this organization? I heard a lot about common ground, that there are, you know, things that we have in common that we had no idea about. But what other things have you learned as being a part of this organization and doing this work?
One of the things that being affiliated with Braver Angels has given me, that I benefited by, is the understanding that when you're communicating with someone on quote unquote the other side, listen, you first need to listen to where they're coming from, listen to their perspective. Braver Angels is not about trying to change anybody's mind. It's not about getting the other person to see and think the way you do. What it is, it's respecting their opinion, giving them the opportunity to say their motivations and why they feel what they feel. And like Maury said, so much of what comes out of this is an understanding that our goals are the same. You know, the way we want to get there is possibly different, but there's much more in common with us as individuals than there is apart or different from us.
Tell me a little bit about what you all did during this last election cycle with the pairs at the polls. What was that, and how was it received by the folks that were voting?
Well, it was a national event that they encouraged members of Braver Angels Red to pair up with the poll, hold up a sign about, you know, unity and everything. And well, you know, I, to be perfectly honest, I really did not want to do it, but I figured I better do it. Rich and I went to the polls, and it was a wonderful experience. It was really wonderful. And the reaction was great. I mean, we didn't have really much of any kind of negative reaction at all. And, you know, some one man pointed to our sign with the people that he was with and says, this is important, you know, we need to be doing this. And so we, you know, it was quite good. So, and Rich.
Yeah, we actually went out three times. Yeah. Went out twice on early voting and then once on election day. And most violent it got was two people out of the 100 or so that we saw turned away and said, no, thank you. So everybody's pre-election fear of violence at the polls and disrespecting people, we didn't see it. And that was a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, I bet. And so just to give folks like a visual of what they could have seen at the polls, Maury, are you all in red and Richard, you're all in blue and you're holding signs or how does it work?
We had hats.
Okay. Okay.
We had a red cap and a blue cap. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, the election has come and gone and one side won and one side lost. How are things now with Braver Angels and this particular alliance in the Metrolina area? Like, I mean, are things, is the temperature of the room still the same, or is there any awkwardness or contention even?
Immediately after the election, there were, I guess, individual reaction versus Braver Angels reaction. Individual reaction, I feel the Reds were excited, the Blues were upset, concerned, whatever. But in the Braver Angels activities we've been involved with and participated in and witnessed since the election, there's just as much, if not more, emphasis and feeling of positivity and the necessity of continuing the work of bridging the divide and understanding the other side. I just want to share one interesting thing that came out of my relationship with Maury, because we have grown together and worked, not only worked together as co-chairs, but talked to each other as blue perspective and red perspective. And prior to the election, I thought it was extremely interesting that all of the concerns that I had heard in my blue bubble about what would happen to the country if the other side won, if Trump won, and what would happen to our democracy, and what would happen to the future of the United States, is exactly the same fear that Maury had in her red bubble. And both sides can't be right. So it was just a real eye-opener to me as to how much our opinions and thought processes are molded by our media and social media and social bubbles, and how important it is for us to reach out and listen to the other side.
Well, you both have mentioned that the mission of the group is to understand versus trying to persuade. But that feels like a really hard thing to do when politics are so personal these days. How do you maintain that? And do you have to step in as co-chairs sometimes and like moderate the group in some way to say, hey, we're not here to persuade. We're here to understand and to, you know, get people out to vote for whoever they're going to vote for.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because that's a very important part of Braver Angels. I mean, there's a formal program for training moderators for events. And so, you know, we're a new alliance and we have some members that are now in that training process because it's important to keep it on track. And
it's important, Sarah. It is hard, but what I've seen is if somebody reaches out to contact us and participates in a Zoom meeting or in a workshop or something, their desire to learn and open up is there. And they continue to try to keep their mind open. Hmm. It's not Laura Gillum, your first guest, said, it's not easy necessarily to have an open mind or be considerate of the other person, but that's the foundation of what somebody wants to learn how to do when they come to Braver Angels.
And did you all know each other before you both got involved in Braver Angels, or no, you met through this work?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Great.
Right.
I'm kind of curious if you'll, you know, be so kind to share with us what your initials impressions of each other were and how those have changed over time.
I had a great, yeah. I mean, Rich is really easy to work with, and it just shows that relationships are more important than people's politics. You know, I kind of joke sometimes and say people that are on, you know, people on my side of the political aisle can push my buttons more, you know, just as much or more than people on the other side, you know, but it's more, it's just so much how we get along with people is so much more than our politics.
Yeah, we, Maury and I have found that we work very well together, even though we both are very much different our political philosophies and political priorities. She refers to me as her blue friend, and I refer to her as my red friend. Not that I'm her only blue friend or she's my only red friend, but one of the things, and I just want to bring this out, in June, there was a national convention for Braver Angels in Kenosha, Wisconsin. There were 740 people, 40% blue, 40% red, and 20% other. And that was curated. That was the membership. The people were actually curated to get that number. And we would go into the dining hall or whatever, and people would intentionally sit next to somebody of the other color to start a conversation.
Wow. That's amazing. That's not something that a lot of people just in the average day going about your day that you would do if you knew that you had, you know, just unknowingly sit down and strike a conversation with someone knowing that their politics were different. Can you talk about maybe some of the uncomfortable moments of doing things like that and how you overcome those uncomfortable moments?
Believe it or not, the most uncomfortable times comes outside of Braver Angels, comes with my blue friends, because, and I'm sure Maury runs into the same thing. This concept is not a mainstream concept. It's people internally generally feel the need to be open to the other side, but very few people are willing to do it or have experienced it. And it's more of getting the information out there that an organization like this exists.
Well, I want to thank Richard London and Maury Wilkinson, the blue and red co-chairs of the Charlotte Metropolitan Braver Angels Alliance. They work to bridge the political divide, not to change minds, but to bring compassion and understanding to the table. You can visit their website at braverangels.org. Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll hear from journalist and author Anna Goldfarb. Anna will be discussing how to mend broken friendships, if you can. It's Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Sarah D'Elia. We've been discussing how to deal with the stress that comes from living in this politically polarized time, and now we're going to turn our focus to mending, changing, or maybe even parting with relationships. Roughly a quarter of Americans say they've ended a friendship due to political disagreements. Some have even taken to social media to purge their friends list post-election. So to discuss this, we're going to talk to Anna Goldfarb, who joins us now. She's known as the New York Times friendship correspondent. She's also a journalist and author of the new book, Modern Friendship. And Anna joins us now. Thanks for helping us navigate the Thanksgiving dinner table, Anna. We appreciate it.
Oh, of course. I'm really excited to be here. This is such an important conversation to be having.
Well, you've written a lot about all the different facets of friendships, how they begin, how they thrive, and how they can sometimes end. What strategies can you offer to help maintain a friendship when political views are clashing?
Well, you know, political views don't have to end a friendship. And I also want to say sometimes people can be on the same team, but still have conflicting ideas of what your party should be doing. So I've seen a lot of chatter just with my own blue friends, and they still have schisms. So this really doesn't even, it spills over into all parts of our life. When you know, we are in our bubbles, we are have so many different identities. And this is historically new to have so many different identities. So the culture is changing, and culture is moving faster. And I think people are just really having trouble wrapping their heads around what does this all mean. And one of the best things you can do is be a friend, act like a friend to your friends. And what that means is, yes, to be respectful, but also to refrain from criticizing or judging or blaming. I did my own research into, you know, do political divides rupture friendships? And I found, like, in my research, it's only about 11% of friendships have ended due to politics. It was higher with, you know, liberal women and higher in the age of Trump. But most people, this isn't a friendship ending issue. It's something that can be navigated, but it can be navigated if you keep those tenets in mind of, you know, criticizing, blaming, threatening. That's going to alienate anyone. So if you have a strategy, you know who your friends are, you've identified them, then it's like, be a friend to them and don't put them on the defense. Don't, you know, those are called disconnection habits, from Dr. William Glasser. Those are things that alienate people, that push people away. Yeah. And you want to bring in more connecting habits of respecting, like appreciating, understanding, like, hey, we both have different ideas of what this country needs, but I want to learn more. And, you know, just giving people, making people feel safe to share their viewpoints with you.
Yeah. It sounds like boundaries are very important. Maybe establishing what's on the table to talk about, what's not, what crosses the line. Do you have any advice for friends that are on opposing political sides? Or, like you said, there's many schisms within political parties that they feel differently about how a particular issue should be addressed. What do you say about boundaries and kind of like setting the rules for what we're going to talk about and what can't be talked about?
Well, I think it's more like being honest and vulnerable. Friendships require trust. And trust requires vulnerability. So that's where we need to start of, you know, this is a sensitive issue for me. You can tell your friend, like, this is a very sensitive issue for me. I feel like we can agree to disagree, and I love you. I value your friendship. I appreciate your friendship. And this, you know, just this is a sensitive topic for me. And I think any friend would be happy to respect that and understand if you explain, this is sensitive to me, for me, because then any friend would be like, oh, I get it. Like, this is a pain point for you. And sometimes these issues, they impact us differently. Some issues to someone is theoretical, and while the issue is concrete for me. So to have the language of, this is a sensitive topic for me because, and here's how I'd like to address it in the future. Like, I understand you, I've had to cut friendships off because they didn't respect that when I said, this topic is sensitive for me, and they keep bringing it up. And then it became an issue of them disrespecting my boundaries, but it wasn't the topic. It was how they dealt with the topic and what, how that made me feel. So then it became something else. So that's what we want to prevent. We want to make our friends feel loved, safe, valued. We can give that to our friends. We can.
Well, you've done a lot of writing on this subject, and there was one piece in particular for the New York Times where you kind of broke down how to diffuse tension at the dinner table around the holidays. So what can you offer listeners about things that they can do, or like game plan ahead of time when you know you're going to be heading into a situation where maybe your boundaries have not always been respected of what you want to talk about and what you don't want to talk about, or you're just going to be in a room full of people where you know politics is a touchy subject and it's going to be brought up somehow?
You know, one thing you can do is role playing. Like, let's with a friend or a significant other, like, okay, what are we going to say when these topics are brought up? Let's role play a little bit and have something in the can. Like, this is what I'll say to someone who, you know, who comes at me with an insensitive comment. You can say, okay, I'll consider that. Like, what can you say to shut it down? You can also, one of my favorite techniques is HALT. It's taken from the recovery community. Of where are you at physiologically? HALT stands for hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So those are sort of like the flashing red moments of I'm going to be irritable if any of these things are sort of on display. So maybe take a nap, maybe eat a little bit before Thanksgiving dinner so you're not hangry and you're more reactive. Those are all things you can do, you know, take a little nap, eat a little granola bar, maybe you'll just be in better position. You can also bring a friend. You can bring an ally. You can bring someone who can help you diffuse, and you can tell them beforehand, you know, I'm nervous about this topic. If this topic comes up, can you help me, you know, extricate myself from this scenario? And just, and one of the most important things is to know what success looks like. You know, I don't think people spend a lot of time thinking about that for these family get-togethers of, you know, maybe success looks like I keep my cool. Maybe success looks like I don't get baited into a screaming match about XYZ. And just have a goal of, you know what, this would be a successful dinner if I just keep my calm, keep my cool, and have a, you know, a perfectly pleasant interaction with these people that care about you, that, you know, that there's love there.
Yeah. I really liked the piece of advice about having an ally at the dinner table. And at first I was like, ooh, but sometimes there's not a baked in ally, but your suggestion is, well, bring someone just because they're not immediate family or whatever, like bring a friend who doesn't have somewhere to go for Thanksgiving, bring them along. I think that's really great advice. Getting back to the friendship aspect of it, are there telltale signs that politics is damaging someone's friendship, that there is, you know, political anxiety, like we talked about earlier, that is impacting it? What are some of those signs that people should look out for in those friendships?
Well, if you feel disrespected, if you feel drained, if you feel like your friend is misunderstanding you or not giving you the benefit of the doubt, those are things we expect from our friends. You know, friendships are such a pleasurable relationship because it's a relationship of equals. It's one of the few relationships as an adult where you're on this unequal footing. You know, you have a boss who's ahead, maybe parents, children, like everything, there's a power dynamic. So friendships go awry when you feel like one friend is trying to dominate the other. And this can come out with a host of things, but it can especially come out with politics of, I can't believe you voted for that person. You know, you should know better. I thought that you had better values. I thought you had a, you know, like those kinds of things rupture that equal footing of peers. And that's, friends will not tolerate it. It's a violation of what a friendship should be. A better strategy is to say like, listen, I love you. We might disagree on how best to chart our country's path, but I trust that you're coming from a good place, a well-intentioned place. I'm coming from a well-intentioned place too. And let's just keep the conversation going. You know, one of the most important things in a democracy is an exchange of ideas. Mm-hmm. Like the way I think of it is what chance do I have to help influence my friends see my point of view if I shut down discussion? You know, this is our duty as a citizen, as a citizen in America today. It is our duty to keep these relationships open. And I'm so impressed with the Braver Angels mission. I think that is absolutely the way forward of, I believe in this country. I believe in a democracy. This is what a democracy requires. It's tolerating other points of view. And just like Rich was saying, of we need to come together, we need to compromise. And I want to do it. I want to do it with my friends who I love and treasure. We can model that for our friends. We can model what respectful discourse looks like. And hopefully they'll take it to their other friendships and they'll show this is how we practice respectful friendships.
That's really well said. And thank you for tying that back to the Braver Angels work. I do want to take for a minute, touch on social media and the role that social media plays in our friendships, because there are some friends that I haven't seen for years, but I still feel connected to them, connected to their lives. We live on opposite sides of the country, but social media keeps us connected. But after the election, some folks have wanted to or needed to for mental health reasons kind of pared down their social media friends. Maybe there are certain things that they don't want to see, or there's rhetoric that they don't want in their feeds. Is that okay to do? Is that what, and what message does that send to that person if, you know, all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, ooh, I'm not on that person's friends list anymore. What are they telling me?
You know, this is a bigger problem where social media does not set us up for success with these nuanced political takes. It is not designed for a respectful conversation. It's designed to get outrage. It's designed to run on anger. Mm. So we are not set up for success with sharing, you know, with social media. It's just, there are bigger forces than you or I can control with our posts. If you do a sensible post, it gets no engagement. And then it's not shuffled to the top of everyone's feed. So this is a game that we're not going to win. And I don't think social media is a great place for these nuanced, you know, level-headed takes. But that said, you absolutely can block or hide anyone that you want in your feed. It is not always personal. You can love someone but not want to see their social media posts. And that's part of the agreement you make when you join these sites. People may not want to, they may not want to see pictures of my cat. It's not even always politics. Like, they might want to see pictures of, you know, my bread. No one's obligated to do anything on social media, but that's the, it cuts both ways of, listen, this is the game. It's not for everyone's cup of tea, and you are absolutely allowed to hide as you see fit, certainly.
Well, let's talk about neighbors for a moment. You've done some writing on how to be a good neighbor, and in Charlotte, there's over 100 people moving to the city daily. What ways can we extend ourselves to be a good neighbor, which sometimes turns into a friendship, sometimes not, even if we know ahead of time that we do not see politically eye to eye?
Well, being a good neighbor, of course, is all about respect. It's about communication. It's about being open to feedback. And it's about help. I mean, one of the most important things we can do to fight climate change is to be friendly to our neighbors, because these are the people that will have the most relevant information for us. Like you said, if the electricity goes out, if, you know, there's some sort of like disaster, your community are the people that are going to be the most important for you. So being a good a neighbor is really about giving permission of, listen, I'm available. I'm here to help. Here's my information. Here are things I'm willing to do. Like, I'm happy to check your mail if you're out of, you know, just to communicate and to give permission. I don't think we do it enough. I think there's a lot of fear and mistrust in our society. We have the lowest trust ever in government, in press, in all these institutions. And of course, it's bound to reflect in our social lives, because this is how our society is right now. So you can fight that. You can say, listen, I'm here to build trust. You can count on me. And just model it for your neighbors and show them, this is how I practice being a good neighbor.
Yeah.
And give them permission to do the same.
We are running out of time, but I have one more question for you. If there was one thing that you hope people will take to their Thanksgiving or holiday, whatever family gathering they're going to this week, one piece of advice that you hope that they hold dear as we walk into maybe some contentious environments, what would that be?
You know, I think everyone's having a really hard time. It's a really uncertain time. So the best thing you can do is give people certainty, because uncertainty creates anxiety.
Mm.
So one of the best things you can do for your friendships and beyond is to give certainty of, you know, I won't be available to talk for the next week, but you can reach me by email. Just giving people certainty of, I'm going to be here. Here's what works for me. I'm not, you know, telling your friends you love them and telling them why. Here's why I love being your friend. Here's what I appreciate about our friendship. I'm not going anywhere for a long time. And just giving people certainty is the best thing you can do this holiday season.
I want to thank all my guests this morning, starting with Laura Gilliam, licensed psychologist in Chapel Hill. We heard from Maury Wilkinson and Richard London, the co-chairs of the Charlotte Metropolitan Braver Angels Alliance, and journalist and author Anna Goldfarb. Her new book is Modern Friendship, How to Nurture Our Most Valued Connections. And from all of us at Charlotte Talks, we wish you a happy holiday season with good food, company, and peaceful conversation.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.